Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories in the NBA with the Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we'll stop in Indiana to speak with Tony East of Locked On Pacers about an Indiana team that is pushing towards the upper half of the Eastern Conference, even without Victor Oladipo. We'll speak with Becca Winkett of Locked On Wizards about the drama in Washington, John Wall's heel, and trade rumors. And lastly, we'll go to Isaac Harris in Dallas to speak about Luka Doncic's performance over the weekend and the return of Dirk Nowitzki. It's all coming up, the biggest stories, with the local experts on Locked On NBA.
Are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hi guys, and welcome back to another week of Locked On NBA. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, and I'm the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com. The NBA, there's all trade rumors, there's injuries, there's big stuff happening right across the league. We're going to be covering quite a few things in today's show, so let's get to it. I'm joined now by the host of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Tony East is here, and we're going to talk Indiana Pacers, a team. I think maybe Tony is going under the radar a little bit at the moment. They're currently, at the time of us recording this, sitting in the fourth seed in the Eastern Conference ahead of the Boston Celtics by half a game at this point. And they're doing it recent times without their best player, Victor Oladipo. First of all, Tony, what's the outlook on Oladipo? There's been some, back and forth, interesting, scary, positive, all sort of conflicting reports on Oladipo's knee. Where are we at?
Yeah, the reports are really bouncing all over the place. I've had some people have whispers that it's like a long-term thing and other whispers that he'll be back next week. Their schedule last week was Orlando, Chicago, Sacramento, and I think they didn't want to bother with giving injury updates for every game with that kind of schedule, and they won all three of those games. So I think they just changed it to indefinitely because of that, and that made it more scary than it actually is. But he was talking to somebody, was talking to one of his friends at the last game they played against the Kings, and he said that he'll be back, quote-unquote, soon. So the outlook is positive for the Pacers.
Because, you know, he is obviously the major part of what they were able to do last season. But, you know, without him, is it just been the fact that the schedule has been a little bit easier of late, that they've been able to push through and win a lot of these games? Or have there been other players who are really stepping up and taking over the void left by Oladipo?
Of course, as with most things, a healthy combo of both of those things has been nice. Sacramento twice, Utah twice before Korver, the Suns, the Bulls, the Magic, the Kings again. Like, it's not really challenging. No matter who's out of your team. But at the same time, they're getting a ton from pretty much all of their reserves. Everyone except for Tyreke Evans is essentially playing pretty close to their maximum potential. And Bojan Bogdanovic has really come to life. He's had two or three games over 25 points. He's been kind of their main ball handler with the starters, which is very interesting to watch. But he's been doing a great job scoring in bunches and playing adequate enough defense to be a good starting power, small forward. And that's really changed their team, having a number one option, even with Vic out.
I think that's interesting with Bogdanovic, because it's something that I've noticed as well with him, is that when, you know, last season it happened a bit when Collison was out, and this season it's happening when Oladipo's out, that he gets more of the ball in his hands. He drives to the rim a lot more. He gets a lot more free throws, and he's one of the best free throw shooters on this team, if not in the league. And when he's generating more free throw attempts, it seems to help his confidence in other areas. And over the season, he's shooting an astonishing 53% from the field, including 49% from three. He's historically been a bit of a shaky shooter, but this is, 26 games in, and he's still shooting at this level. Is there something different we're seeing? Is it just an elevated level of confidence in this, increased role or priority in the offense that's helping Bogdanovic?
Yeah, I was musing about that myself on Twitter last week. Like, is this just what he is now? Is he this good of a shooter? Because, like you said, 26 games is a long time to just say that it's a stretch at this point. And I think it's a healthy combo of role, fit, and confidence, all the things you said, basically. He's always been craving a kind of a starting role, and he plays basketball literally year-round. Like, he plays for Croatia every single summer. So finally having the chance to show that he's a guy, I think, really gave him a lot of confidence, and combining that with a good opportunity to, A, be a lead ball handler and show he can get to the rim, and B, he's really good at playing off of pretty much everyone on this team, has just put him in the perfect spot to show how much of a lethal scorer he can really be when given the chance.
Miles Turner's a guy that was, I guess, heavily criticised at times last season and even earlier this season, but we've seen a pretty significant change in his performance over the last 2 to 3 weeks especially. He's blocking shots at a fantastic level, but one thing that he was heavily criticised for last season was a lack of rebounds. And the way he ended last season, I think he was pulling down, he had 2 rebounds a game over the last 6 or 7 games of the season, of the regular season that is, and was really struggling. But over the last month, he's over 8 rebounds per game. He's blocking 3 shots per game in those 13 games over the last month. He seems revitalized. Is there something that's changed there with him? Is it you're feeling more comfortable in the partnership with Domantas Sabonis and Thad Young that's enabling this confidence? You know, what's been the turnaround here in Miles Turner?
I wish I knew exactly what made him click all of a sudden. I don't really know. But you're absolutely right that there was some change after the first 10 or 12 games of the season for him where he just figured it out. And with his thing is like all summer, surprisingly, you know, like you said, the rebounding was kind of an issue last year, and shaky shooting and like awkward movement has always been a thing with him. But they just told him once again, like, focus on your defense, become an elite defender. And, you know, your offense can be what it is. But when you're such a good defender that your team forces a lot of misses, it lets you have easier opportunities on offense. And I think, you know, having that elite defense combined with him, you know, being a little more polished on that end of the floor, thanks to a good offseason regimen of training, has really made him spring up and to be a more effective player this year.
Now, I don't think there's anything necessarily to this, but I do find it interesting that since he missed the game versus the Spurs on the 23rd of November, and since then he's had 4 double-doubles in the next 7 games. But interestingly, in all those games where he's had double-digit rebounds, he's had a lot of blocks. He had a 16-13 game with 5 blocks, 14-12 with 3 blocks, 18-11 with 5 blocks. I misspoke, the last game against the Kings wasn't a double-double because he only scored 9 points, but he had 13 rebounds and 4 blocks. The other 3 games in that 7-game stretch, 1 block, 1 block, 2 blocks. It's like that if he gets a couple of blocks, he's more energized on the boards, or if that's just a weird coincidence that's happening, but he's had at least 3 blocks in those 4 double-digit rebounding games and 2 or less in the games where he hasn't got double-digit rebounds. It probably means nothing, but it is a weird thing, and I feel like a lot of Miles' game is based on confidence and self-confidence and self-belief, so maybe there is something to that.
Yeah, he has this weird tendency to kind of like not fade away, but not like he jumps and lands behind where he jumped when he shoots. And on those shots, it's very clearly short a lot of the time. But when when he's confident, he really strokes it normally and lands, you know, forward or right where he jumped from. And it just looks better because it's always very high arcing. So when he steps back, it kind of looks herky jerky. You can just tell like when it's different. It's very strange that he has those games where it's not like that. But yeah, when his confidence is rolling like this and they're giving him opportunities, the team is much better. When it's strange, their record when he has more shot attempts is like crazy good. They give him opportunities, that helps his confidence too, and that makes him a much better player.
We've been pretty positive here talking about the Pacers, but I do want to talk about a player you mentioned earlier, Tyreke Evans, who has really struggled, I feel, to fit in with this team. He's playing nowhere near the level that he was last season. He's shooting only 37% from the field, 37% from three. This is a guy that, despite a poor reputation, had been a 40% three-point shooter for multiple seasons and really took things over for the Memphis Grizzlies last season. He can't get it together, even with Oladipo out, Nate McMillan's playing him only 23 minutes a night, not giving him that extra run. Why can't he sort of fit in here with Indiana? We know he was suspended earlier in the season for missing a practice. Is it a personality clash? Is it him not being happy? Have you heard any whispers about that?
I don't really know. I think last year also he was in Memphis where he was born. I think that helps a lot with personality stuff and like being energized and all that. But I don't think he dislikes it here. But he actually talked about this last week to Mark Monteith, a Pacers reporter, and he's talking about how this team has run the most set plays of any team he's ever played for, and he's not really acclimated to like going through options and, you know, cutting at certain times and stuff like that. He's more used to what Nate McMillan calls quote unquote Philly style street ball, where he just like he gets it, he takes a few dribbles, then beats a guy to the rim or takes an off the dribble three, and he's good at those things even though his rim finishing has been pretty poor this season. But when he has to be more in the flow of the offense, which when he's playing with the starters like he has been recently is a lot, he's not as good at that. And I think it's going to take some acclimation just to get used to sets because they have returned a ton of guys from last year who are all used to it. I think he'll get better, but it has been really rough, especially because, you know, he's getting outplayed by literally every other guard on the team, including at times rookie Aaron Holiday. So it's been tough.
Yeah, it has been a weird situation for Tyreke. But of course, for all the information on the Indiana Pacers, especially when we hear about Victor Oladipo's return, Tony will have that for you over on Locked On Pacers. Tony, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
Yep, appreciate you having me, Josh.
The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on both Twitter and on Instagram. Go follow our handles, which are Locked On NBA Net on both of those sites. On Twitter, all of our hosts pushed into one feed, so you get the latest breaking news, injury reports, weird coaching decision, whatever it is, pushed through to one feed. While on Instagram, we get the biggest news filtered down to 60 seconds in Instagram stories, plus longer news items in the regular Instagram feed. That's Locked On NBA Net on both Twitter and on Instagram. Now I'm joined by one of the hosts of the Locked On Wizards podcast. It is Becca Winkett, back on the show to discuss some things happening with the Washington Wizards. Becca, since we've last spoken to you, Dwight Howard has been ruled out for a big chunk of the season with back surgery. I guess I'll talk a little bit about that and how the Wizards have been looking to replace him in the lineup. What have you seen from Thomas Bryant, who the team acquired off waivers at the beginning of the season or in the offseason? How has he looked as the starting center for this team?
Well, Thomas Bryant has been playing really well, in my opinion, for rookie. This is his first year. He's averaging 5.4 points, 3.6 rebounds a game. And the reason for his position as a starting center per Scott Brooks is because of his energy and his desire to play and his desire to be better every day. And I think that's really important for a team who seems to be struggling with their lack of effort on the court. And when Thomas Bryant in, his high-level energy really wants – like, it really makes other players want to be better. So I think he's doing a great job so far, given the circumstances. I mean, replacing Dwight Howard is huge shoes to fill, but I think he's doing amazing so far.
Well, one of those centers who was replacing Dwight earlier in the season was Jason Smith, and he was traded over the weekend to the Milwaukee Bucks in exchange for Sam Decker. And it appears, Becca, that some of the Wizards players aren't that happy about it. So what's been the fallout, I guess, from this trade? We've heard Bradley Beal spout off in the media. What's the vibe from these players, and what's their thought on this Jason Smith deal?
I'm not really sure why they aren't happy with Sam Decker. But I can tell you that Jason Smith got along with everybody in the locker room. He was a fan favorite. He just, no matter what his circumstances was, if he was playing or if he was not playing, he always brought that, you know, positivity on the bench. You know, you'd see if someone made a shot or someone did something great, you'd see him being the first one to stand up off the bench, cheering them on. And I'm not sure why they're reacting that the way that they are, but I would assume it's because he was a great player and a great teammate, and everyone is not happy about it. But I can tell you that the Wizards, I believe they did it because of salary reasons. Jason Smith was on a $15 million contract, which we were paying $5 million. This is last year, and it lowered our tax. The trade lowered the tax payment from $14.49 million to $9.79 million. So that would be my only reason why this trade occurred, because it's a pretty even trade.
Yeah, in terms of value, look, Smith wasn't even in the rotation at all. And you know, if you're not going to break up the locker room for anything apart from a directive from ownership to try and reduce that tax payment for a team that at the moment isn't really going anywhere and things don't look all that positive for the future, for the rest of this season. They sit in the 10th spot in the Eastern Conference at the moment with an 11-15 record. And this comes after a game across the weekend where they lost to the Cavaliers by 15 points, in a game in which John Wall scored a career-low 1 point. And then news came out that he's dealing with bone spurs in his heel. So, you know, what's the outlook on Wall and his heel? Are we looking at missed time here? From what I understand, it's been something he's been dealing with for a while, but it's only sort of just come out now. With John, is it partially just getting it out there as an excuse for scoring only 1 point in a game? What's the story with his heel?
John Wall always struggles with injuries, and he tends to keep them pretty private, and he doesn't like them getting out to the public. And I think Scott Brooks, you know, if John Wall feels like he's up to play, even though, you know, he's in a lot of pain, he'll just allow him to do so. And I think that's a huge problem with John Wall, because he's struggled with knee injuries before and hand injuries and other injuries. And, you know, I'm just to the point personally where I feel like if he's injured, just let him sit out. I mean, this season is not going to be a season where we're going to make it, you know, past the first round or second round or Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, we might not even make the playoffs. The Wizards might not make the playoffs. So, I mean, if he's injured, I just say sit him out. You know, Howard's got his own set of injuries. This is not going to be the year for us. So I feel like John Wall should just get healthy, in my opinion.
Yeah, look, he's been obviously bothered by the knee last season, now the heel. He missed a game a couple of days ago due to the birth of his child as well. But that does lead me to, I guess, a positive on this team in that Tomas Satoranski has joined the starting lineup. He was fantastic last season replacing Wall. He's been fantastic so far this season in limited minutes, with Scott Brooks admitted was a mistake that he was playing him so little. Do you see Satoranski sticking in this starting lineup? Do you think it's a temporary thing? Do you think they'll go back to Oubre or Markieff Morris there, because Morris has been really thriving in that bench role? Or do you think he's going to stick there as that secondary ball handler at the small forward position for the rest of the season?
I see Satoranski filling a bigger role this season. I do believe he's going to stay in that starting lineup. Markieff Morris, I'd like to mention that off the bench, he's been incredible. I feel like Scott Brooks will not put him back in the starting lineup as long as he's performing really well off the bench, because for whatever reason, it's working for us. And it's hard. It's hard when players get benched and they perform so well. And it's like, well, they're doing so well off the bench. Does that mean they can start or they should just stay there? But I think Scott Brooks is hesitant to make, big lineup changes sometimes. So I feel like Tomas Satoranski, who is amazing, he's going to remain as a starter. And Kelly Oubre, Otto Porter, I think they might, rotate every once in a while. But I'm excited to see how Thomas performs the rest of the season.
One last thing on the Wizards here, Becca. We've heard all these talks about rumors of trades being mentioned, of potential moves of guys like Wall or Beal or Porter, that everyone's available to be moved. Do you think any one of that, I say, I'm going to just use the term pretty lightly, but big three will get moved? And if so, who do you think would be the most likely candidate to be traded this season?
In my opinion, I think Bradley Beal would be the most tradable. John Wall and Otto Porter, their contracts are just massive. They're too large. I don't know how they would be able to be traded. And Bradley Beal is the one who is performing pretty much the best out of the three of them. And it would be easier to trade him because of his salary. And hopefully they don't trade him, because I feel like we really need him right now. John Wall and Otto Porter, Bradley Beal. Bottom line is, I don't believe that management or this organization will trade them. I believe that, management believes in the backcourt. They believe in its core. And I don't think that they're ready to make any major changes. But as you can see here with Jason Smith and Sam Decker, they are trying to make minor changes to this lineup to see if we can, one, lower the salary and getting, similar value players while at the same time.
It's going to be interesting to watch how things pan out here in Washington with the season clearly not going to plan. Wall's heel injury, what that means, and Dwight Howard's situation. Lots of stuff for us to check out. And of course, Becca will have that for you all over on Locked On Wizards throughout the season. Becca, thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me.
All right. Thank you so much.
Is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcast. Our demographic is 98% male, higher educated, higher earning than your traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast by emailing me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Let's bring in one of the hosts of the Locked On Mavericks podcast. It is Isaac Harris. We're here to talk about a team that is surprising quite a few people, I guess, with where they're currently sitting right in the mix for a Western Conference playoff spot at the moment. That is the Dallas Mavericks. And of course, Isaac, they are fueled by the overwhelming favorite at this point for the Rookie of the Year award, and that is Luka Doncic, who is fresh off majestical performance against the Houston Rockets. Just for people who, everyone knows what Doncic is doing, but Isaac, just how important has he been for this team, and has he even surprised you with what he's been able to do so far in this first 20-odd games of his career?
It's just unbelievable kind of what he's doing already at 19, and 19 gets thrown around a lot for Luka, but you really just can't state that enough. And he was built up by all these draft people coming into the NBA draft and, watching these YouTube clips and him playing at Real Madrid. And he's the most accomplished European player to ever come to the NBA. But, you know, a lot of people thought his playmaking would translate and just his basketball IQ and stuff like that. But he kind of had a little streaky shooting towards the end of his career in Europe. But now in the NBA, it's incredible. I mean, how that has translated, how his step back has translated to one of the signature shots really around the league right now is just insane to think about and to look at. And, you know, Harrison Barnes missed the first four or five games of the season, and Luka kind of had to take on that scoring role. And a lot of people, including myself, thought that Luka would come in and average something around like a 15, 16 points and, you know, 6 or 7 boards, 5 or 6 assists, somewhere around that stat line. And, you know, for the first 20 games of the season, he's hovering around the 20 points per game mark, and which is just what he's doing right now is incredible. It's already, Mark Stein said this a few days ago or last week, and he said, you know, it's already Luka's team, and that's really what it is. Like this is Dirk's city, this is Dirk's franchise, but obviously Dirk hadn't played yet this season, but Luka has captured the hearts of Dallas, and what he did on Saturday night against the Houston Rockets was one of the first of just signature moments in games of his career.
He basically engineered that victory over the Rockets with his own personal, I think it was 11-0 run at the end of the fourth quarter, hitting step back threes, as you've talked about there. Already, he's putting up some, you know, fantastic numbers, and I'm glad that you brought up that point about it being his team. Like, he has established himself as that primary option ahead of Harrison Barnes, ahead of Dennis Smith Jr., of course, who's currently out with that wrist injury. How, in terms of handling the ball, he's not doing probably quite as much as what he did in Europe of that role, but playing a different role, but still orchestrating things and, you know, creating a lot of shots for this team. But I want to talk about the Mavericks as a whole, not just focus entirely on Doncic, which I'm sure we could do for this entire segment. But the weird thing about this Mavericks team is just how unbalanced they've been on the home at home versus on the road. 11-2 at home and 2-9 on the road. Now, that is a significant discrepancy. Is there anything that's really standing out to you? Is it, you know, they've had easier opponents at home, more difficult opponents on the road? That is a stark difference. Is there any reason behind that that you can put your finger on?
Well, some of that was, you know, they start off the season in Phoenix. They, you know, a lot of people right now are looking at our record. They've won 10 out of the last 13 games, which is crazy. But in a lot of Mavs fans in particular, look and say, man, those losses at the beginning of the season, they kill us. The losses against Atlanta, in Atlanta, where they were up by 26 points and they lost that game. And then the very first game of the season in Phoenix, they lost that game. But both of those games, they were without Harrison Barnes. And some people have their different opinions on Harrison Barnes, but he was the leading scorer of the team last year. He is a very crucial part of this team. And so those are two losses right there on the road in which they didn't have Harrison. But it's just kind of they've been out of sync a little bit on the road. The other night they had a back-to-back, and it was an away. The first game was at home in Dallas against Portland. The very next night they're playing in New Orleans. It looked like the definition of a back-to-back on the road, and they were flat. It was a horrible game for them. So I think it will even out in the long run. But, you know, 9 in a row at home, what they're doing at home right now, they haven't won 9 in a row at home since the championship season in 2011, so which is just crazy for them. But yeah, I mean, the road thing is being talked about as a team. Carlisle talks about it. The players talk about it. It's something that they are focusing on, but I would expect that to even out at some point.
You would think it would have to. It can't keep going at this sort of level of discrepancy. You mentioned his name a little bit earlier on, Isaac, and that is Dirk Nowitzki. We've yet to see him make his debut for his 21st NBA season. Every time it seems that the other questions brought up to Dirk or to Carlisle, it just keeps on getting pushed back with this ankle soreness, and there's never a like, oh, we're almost there. It's like, oh, just we're a fair way away. We're a little way away. There's a little bit of time to go. You know, what are we looking at here for Dirk? Like, are we maybe looking at pushing into the 2019 portion of the season before he returns?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of buzz going into really this homestand, this three-game homestand here, and of about him making his return, because you know, he had even hinted or he even talked about it on the broadcast. He joined the local broadcast here. I was like 3 or 4 weeks ago. And he said, you know, this recovery is taking way longer than he originally thought going into the season. And he had the ankle surgery in the offseason. And he actually addressed the media today in Dallas. Some people thought that, hey, we might see him Monday night in Dallas against the Magic. But he kind of shot that down. He said, hey, I'm not quite there. He's in his mind, in the Mavericks' eyes right now is, hey, what's the rush? You know, this will most likely, it looks like it could be his last season, and the team is playing well right now. What's the rush? I think the focus now is, you know, playoffs has always been the goal for the team this year. And hey, how can we get a healthy Dirk Nowitzki ready for that final stretch? And it right now, however long it takes, that's how long they're going to do it. They're not going to rush anything. They're taking the super long approach to this. And he's practicing with the team. We just showed up to practice back last week. I walked into practice and he was playing 3-on-3 against Luka and some of the other guys. He actually dunked one. It was halfway on Luka, yelled at him, said something to Luka. It was a cool moment. And so if Dirk is dunking in practice, you know, he's getting close. So I would expect it in the near future, sometime in December, I would assume he makes his debut.
How does Dirk fit in with this team when he returns? He's almost definitely going to be coming off the bench. We've had, you know, strong play from Maxi Kleber and Dwight Powell, the two reserve big men. Where's he fitting in? Which one of these guys is going to be out of the rotation? How much are we expecting Dirk to play?
That, you know, that's one of the biggest questions right now, because, I mean, you mentioned it, Maxi and Dwight Powell are just playing unbelievable. They're just this big man duo in the Mavs bench unit, which this Mavs bench unit is one of the best bench units in the whole entire league. And but Maxi and Dwight, they have these defined roles. Rick Carlisle is a role type of guy. Every player in the locker room in Dallas has these list of five things in which defines their role on the team. And they're very strict about that. And Rick Carlisle's five man, DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Powell in that second unit, is the rim rolling, defending. You know, that's the athletic play above the rim type of guy. That's what the five spot is in Carlisle's system. So when DeAndre goes out, Dwight steps into that role and kind of plays the same type of role in that. Well, Maxie's the four, and Maxie spent his whole offseason. I did a whole piece with Maxie and members of the Mavs front office about this earlier in the year, about this shot that Maxi Kleber had worked on this offseason, and to be able to play the four spot. So as far as roles go, Dirk would fit into that four spot and probably take a few minutes away from Maxi Kleber. And, you know, Dirk's not going to step in there and, you know, be averaging 25, 30 minutes a night, especially right off the bat. But if I had to pick one between the two, and I'm picking basically just between just because how Carlisle does his roles and rotations, I would say that he takes a few minutes away from Maxi, which is crazy to think about because Maxi's been playing so well.
It's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out for this Mavericks team, who are making this push for the playoffs, and we'll see what Doncic's evolution is going to be over the rest of the season. Isaac, you and Nick will have that covered for us over on Locked On Mavs. Thanks for jumping on Locked On NBA with me today.
No problem. Thank you so much.
And that'll do it for another episode of Locked On NBA. Thanks to Tony, Becca, and Isaac for joining me today. Make sure you're following me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and the network at Locked On NBA Net on both Twitter and on Instagram. And if you are listening to this podcast, which of course you are because you just heard me say that, go and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, or on Spotify. And if you could leave us a 5-star review, that would be absolutely sensational. So go ahead and do that. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.